Welcome to another episode of the Powerless to Powerful Recovery podcast. My name is Jason. I'm an alcoholic and addict. As always, our mission is to share experience, strength, and hope across multiple media platforms, the story of addiction and the road to recovery. We are not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous or any other 12-step-based organizations or groups in any way. And we're back and in the building. I got my co-host. What's up, Ron?
What's going on, Jay?
Ronnie, no matter what, is back. I mean, it's been too long.
Too long. Way too long.
I mean, we're getting hate mail, hate DMs. I mean, no one's ever slid into my DMs, but I mean, my wife's on the show today, so.
I was getting a bunch of messages. They thought we broke up.
They thought we broke up. They did, because they haven't seen anything in a while. So we're back, and we're here today with my special guest, part two, with my wife. And she's back. AI Ash is in the building. And so today we're talking about part two of our story, and part one has just dropped. And so I'm curious to see what everybody thinks about that. Please share, like, subscribe, drop the comments, give your thoughts, give some encouragement, give some advice, whatever the case might be, something that touched you. But we actually left off with actually day one of an 8-year prison sentence and a story of that, what was to be to set the tone and of this next, you know, journey and chapter of our life. But I think what's also very interesting, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of the followers and listeners who've been listening to us for a long time know the story of Ron and myself, but for all the new followers that we've acquired, you know, day one for me on an 8-year prison sentence was also day one for you of an 8-year prison sentence, like pretty much the same day one, like same day of the year type thing. So I'm going to let you take it from there, Ron. So why don't you just talk a little bit about that?
Okay. So, yeah. And a lot of people, they start to tie it in when they hear our message and our story, and how I'm so tied in with your guys' story.
Move this closer a little bit to you. There we go.
Is that we good?
Yeah, there we
okay.
go.
Okay.
There we go. Much better.
Because throughout their story, the part that just posted, I was in towards the end, the last few years of that, I was there for all of it.
Yeah, and so we kind of talked about that, you know, of being in Crossroads and being in detox and going to Crossroads, doing the Right Track program and finally admitting that there was a problem. And then they finally allowed me to get a job. And I walked across the street to a telemarketing company. And when I walked in there, that was you, brother.
Yeah.
And we definitely gave you the shout out because you weren't available when we recorded that one.
Yeah, just real quick, and I'll tell you about my day one. I never forget the first time I met Ashley. She had Bella in her tummy, and she was so young and just like deer in the headlights look in this phone room standing there with Jason while I'm handing him a $3,000 check. And her head was just, she didn't know what to make of it all. And this was just the beginning of our shenanigans. But anyhow, it is what it is.
And so the craziest part about it all is we both caught an 8-year prison sentence right around the same time of each other. We actually got released within 2 weeks of each other. Most everybody knows the story. But, you know, I think what's important is that recovery journey and that journey of prison, because we can look at the prison time and, you know, I always looked at it, you know, one way. And that was, this is just nothing but wasted time. I'm not getting anything done. You know, I always say I would be doing all X, Y, and Z. And the truth was, when I was out, I wasn't doing any of X, Y, and Z. And I didn't make any changes the first prison sentence to get out and do anything different when X, Y, and Z took place. You know, but the journey this time was valuable time.
Sure.
And so why don't you share about day one, your valuable time, and that extended period, and then we'll jump into, you know, day one for me and what day one looked like for Ash, because, you know, that's a different day one, you know?
Sure. Yeah, for me, and I don't think I've ever told either one of you this. So I got sentenced before Jason. He was still out for a little bit longer. You know, when I got locked up, they were hiding me out in a hotel room. They were the last people I seen the night before at like 11 o'clock at night. They came by and dropped me off a gallon of milk. Another story, another time. Yeah, they dropped me off some milk, and that's the last time I had seen them. So we fast forwarded, I get arrested, I get sentenced. The night before I went to get sentenced, there I was. I got out of my cell and I didn't have anybody to call. And I called Jason and there was like seconds on the phone and you answered it. And all he said was, I love you. And
I forgot about that, dude. Remember? I totally forgot about that. It was that free 1 minute phone call, and that was it. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and off the prison I went, and I was an extremely broken individual. When I got there, you know, it took me a minute to get out of county because I was just so unruly. I couldn't have a cellie. I couldn't be taken out of my cell.
Oh, you didn't play well with others, brother?
No, I was I was
some
just
things
so,
don't change.
Yeah. I just, everything to the core, I was angry. I was lost and frustrated. I get to prison, and day one for me, I'm sitting out in front of the building, and I wasn't talking to anybody. I wasn't having conversations with people. I just was so broken, didn't know what I was going to do, didn't know if I was going to get my hands on a paper, and that restless, irritable, and discontented at the highest level would go away. I knew if I went and got a paper of heroin and I shot that paper in my arm, how I was feeling at that moment would go away. And I didn't. And it wasn't because of my willpower. It was because God intervened. He put an individual in my life. Man walked over to me, put his hand out. You guys know my theory at this point. I did believe in God, but I didn't believe God wanted anything to do with me. And from this moment, with this man putting his hand out and then building that relationship with me, God does wear people close. He shows up. You know, I talked about it the other day. You know, I asked God for strength. And I think that God's just going to give me the ability to do it, and I'm going to power through this situation. No, that's not how it works at all. God will give me a difficult situation for me to get stronger. And when I put it in perspective like that, that's how my whole 7 years was. He continued to put situations in front of me, and he kept showing me over and over and over again that I had to serve others no matter what. No matter what that capacity looks like. So that was kind of the theme of my 7 years, was serving others. And for anybody who's been incarcerated, if you can navigate that and you can serve others in an environment where there's wolves, there's no doubt that God was running the show with all that. I remember I was 4 years into my sentence. I'd got to a minimum yard. I'm working on a...
Papa John's.
Yeah, I'm working at Papa. Shout out ACI.
Hey, big shout out Mario Torres.
Yeah, and they gave me
Diaz, excuse me. Yeah.
They gave us we had cell phones, but they were hooked to the Wi-Fi so that we could pull the orders. But we had internet access. So I remember I went and hid behind these crates. I don't think you know this. So I went behind these crates, and something else I got to say too is something I did every year was on Jason's birthday. Was have a honey bun on him. You know, we were across the state. We didn't know what each other were doing. And something else I always did, I had this prayer card that I have today still. It made it through my 7 years. And there's like 9 people that I prayed for every day in my entire 7 year sentence. And Jason, Ashley, and Bella were on that list. And I was able to bring that home with me. So fast forward, here I am. I got this cell phone. So I sneak behind these crates and I'm, and Arizona Department of Corrections, inmate data search. And I look up Jason and Sarah, and I look. I was a flat timer. I got 7 years flat. My release date was March 31st, 2023. That was never going to change. No Senate bills, no good time, no bad time. My date would never change. I look. Jason's release date was March 31st, 2023. I said, are you shitting me?
The same day.
And then I looked, and he had all kinds of tickets.
Yeah, you know, so I needed to get a little bit more research and continue to build out that resume, which is now 4 pages. Thank you. You know, and I think that's so important because to have these moments, to have all three of us today on a podcast, to have the ability to open desert recovery centers and be open today. The grand opening was Monday. We're open. If you or anyone desperately in need of recovery, in need of support, love, hope, services, please get in touch with us. We are here to help, and we are open. And You know, it wasn't the play in the playbook from the very, very beginning, but God had its way of taking care of outcomes, and we're all three a part of this project and something we're a part of, something that we built and something that we get to do now to share our experience, that valuable time that we both had. And now bring that with our clinical team. I mean, big shout out to all the doctors with Desert Recovery Centers. I mean, there's so many of them, it's not even funny. Clinical psychologists on site daily, involved in direct care, the ancillary services, the yogas, the things, the personal training sessions, the soft wave therapy, the massages. I mean, I might just have to take everything for a test drive. You just took the bidet for a test drive, brother. You don't want to talk about that?
No, I do.
That was Ash, wasn't it? No, oh, I you do?
No, I had to wait for 45 minutes. Ash kept powdering her nose.
but let's really, you know, this is part two with my wife, and I really want to take an opportunity to really talk about what this is like and being involved with someone incarcerated and doing a prison sentence with them and them finding recovery and the challenges that brings when you would think it would just bring nothing but rainbows and sunshine. But that's not always the case, you know, but... So let's talk a little bit about our journey and getting that 8-year prison sentence and making it through the beginning in Alhambra for 90 days ish, or was it a couple months with no phone calls, a couple letters back and forth, and finally I make it to Tucson Complex. And I think it's important, everybody hears me talk all the time, but what was that moment like for you, that time in Alhambra, me getting sentenced, finally touching down to Tucson, realizing it's about a 2-hour drive? Figuring out how to, you know, put money on the phones, figure out how to do all those things. You know, why don't you just share a little bit about what that time period was like for you?
I think a lot of people don't realize it wasn't just a given that I just jumped in and was like, let me figure out what Securus is. Let me just get a JPay. Let me go get a bunch of stamps and postcards and just jump in and become a pro. I didn't start out this entire experience that way. I think it was around the time you were sentenced, it crossed my mind, like, this might be my choice, but I had to think about my daughter. I had to think about what type of parent am I giving her? Am I going to give her a dad she's only heard about? Is he going to come home and even be at his best? What am I making the right choice for her? So there was about a month that I really contemplated, and I think I brought some postcards. It's funny.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead, just take a look. And for all the county jail people out there, which are most of the followers of the Powerless to Powerful podcast, you know we only get postcards. They give you free ones, and these are all free postcards. I mean, there's a box of postcards.
Yeah, I grabbed a small stack, but I know there's a few in there where you had mentioned, like, I know you won't pick up the phone, and you were getting real concerned because I was being real short, and you were trying to prepare me for the things that you needed to go away. I need $300 for a TV. I need, you know, extra blankets and things. And I'm like, this is the beginning. Like, do I want to be the person just sending money when you need something? So it crossed my mind, like, I could go off the radar right now. My daughter is 3 years old. She'll never miss her dad. We'll be fine. And I thought about just moving to California. You know, my extended family's there. I can get a job. I can get a nice, you know, little place for her and I. And we can just let him live his life. If this is the way he wants to live, I don't want to be, you know, just someone going along with it. So for about 2 to 3 weeks, I really thought about it. And it occurred to me, like, this was a person that I loved that was in a very dark place. He had been, and I had to really do my research on addiction. I had to realize the person I knew was no longer in charge. Something had physically and, you know, mentally grabbed him, and he was making decisions whether I liked them or not, whether they were against me personally or not. This was not the person that I knew and loved. Am I going to forgive and move on? Or am I going to forgive and just completely move out of the state, move on with my life? So I made a really, really, you know, I had to really get real with myself and decide I'm in this. And once I decided I'm in this, I'm doing it, I actually got his initials tattooed on my wrist.
Oh, you know that's right, Ron. Oh, you know that's right, brother.
And stress went away for a little bit when you heard that.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, I'm going to be all right, I think, for a little bit. She's definitely in now for a little bit. But, I mean, we're talking about, you know, 8-year prison sentence, you know?
Jay, I got to ask you something. When she told you she got that, because you were in prison when she got that, right?
Correct. I was in county jail, actually.
Yes.
How many people did you ask if that means she's going to ride this out with me?
Everybody who would listen. Just had to get confirmation, brother.
Yeah, everybody.
Because we're already preparing for the worst, you know. Yeah. And the odds of us making it through an 8-year prison sentence, I mean, we defied every single statistic known to mankind. And I think that's important because that's a lot of the questions that we get. You know, how'd you do it? How'd you make it through it? You know, because when it was all said and done and I ended up getting the 8-year prison sentence, and I remember that day I asked you for the money for the TV, or I tried to prepare you and you hung up on me. And that's right, I was stressing. That's the only time in the 7 years, Ron, the only time where she didn't answer the phone for about a week, the whole entire time. Even through all the other things, that was the only time. And I never asked her for money again. And then when I did get sentenced, and I remember I called her that night when I finally made it back, I got the 8 years, it was done. She's like, I just put the money on your books. I was like, thank God. Thank God.
In my head, and know? I did this, it was like, that's it. I got to figure it out. I committed. It was to him. It was to myself. Because no matter what, I'm going to look at my hand. I'm going to look at my wrist with my wedding ring on it. And I'm going to realize whatever I do now is for all of us. So good, bad, not answer the phone, not write him back, I'm still in it. So for me, it was to hold myself accountable, to make sure no matter what, we're going to get through it. You know, we're mad, we're upset, we're whatever. I had to give myself something concrete. And I'm not a tattoo person, so my only exception was to put this on me permanently because this was it. Like
with an infinity sign. Checks out.
He's alive or dead. I mean, I gave it my all, so it's on you,
bro. I mean, what do you even say?
That's your greatest close, bro.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, brother. Put it on the board, brother.
Put it on the board.
we're going to move on from that. We're not even going to touch that. But
I mean that in the best way possible.
For
some
sure.
Things don't change with you, too, I swear.
But let's get back to it. And I remember, you know, I remember the tattoo. I remember day one. I remember Alhambra. I remember just thinking, how the heck are we going to do this? I remember finally getting to Tucson Complex. You know, they brought me there. You know, you get to show up in the middle of the night. It's cell living. I get a celly. So I get in there. And I remember I pulled my chair out that very first morning. And it was, we were right out onto the yard. And I pulled my chair out and I sat it down there. And I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to do 7 years? Like, shit. Like, this is going to be something, you know? And as soon as the doors pop, I hear immediately Duke calls this dude out, calls him, the B and the P and the whole thing, you know, calls him all the words. Calls him out, fights him in the day room.
Your celly?
No, another dude on the tier, you know. And listen, and then so what ends up happening is after he beats this dude up, first off, I would have bet anything in the world he was going to get beat up, but he didn't. He beat this dude up, came out of the day room, threw up everywhere because he was so tired, right? And then he came over. He was my neighbor, and I met him for the first time, and that's IROC. And IROC today is somebody that I still keep in touch with. Someone over the next 7 years would be on every yard that I went to. Someone that his wife came just like Ash. Another one that defied the odds with a 10-year prison sentence and a wife that wrote it all out. They just had a baby. Shout out to Linda. They're all working together with all the guys that, you know, with the roofing and all the things. And I never forgot that. I'm like, oh my God, this is how we're going to start this off. And we got to immediately lock right back down, you know? But that's some of the questions that we get all the time, you know? And I think it's important, Ron, to share the relationship that you had with your mom and the type of correspondence that you had with her and your experience, because my experience was writing letters all the time and phone calls as much as I possibly could and trying to be a present father and getting ready for visitation and doing all those things. So we're going to come back to that here in a second, but why don't you share some of the things that we used to do, Ash, together, especially early in the beginning, you really just, because that was, I think, the real make it or break it point was that beginning first 3 years, you know, the real uphill climb, because you look at it as the uphill climb, then the downturn. You know, and I gassed you up on 65% for about 4 years. I had you thinking I was coming home in 2020 for a long time. Yeah. Cause we're hopeful that's prison math, Ron. It's a little prison math, brother. It's called fake it till you make it, brother.
My sure neighbor is. Had the Senate bill. It was true.
Yeah, no, I mean,
we're getting 65%, Jay.
Yeah.
I'm going home.
Yeah, we're getting it, brother. It's happening. And she was on the legislature. Oh, I mean, we'll talk about that in a second. But, Ash, why don't you just share some of the things that we did? I mean, you brought one of the books that we went through together. You got some of our mail. You also had a magazine that you used to make me every single week called the Insera Insider. It was a five-page magazine. A new edition came out every week. It had what Bella was doing at school, what her interests were, what her hobbies were, pictures, what Goodwill finds that you had, funny jokes, updates and current events in the world, soccer scores for me. And she did that for over almost 2 years. Every single week, a new edition of the Insera Insider came out. So why don't you share a little bit about, you know, how we stayed connected and some of the things that we did together because, you know, we defied the odds.
We did. I took it on as like almost another full-time job because it was. It was so much more complex than a long-distance relationship because I read every book I could about how to cultivate intimacy when, you know, there's so many, I don't want to say normal, but normal situations where people are apart. There's nothing about people in prison. There's things about for military wives. There's things for people that just happen to be dating and they, you know, work across the country from each other or whatever the situation may be. But there's nothing related to addiction or incarceration or anything. So I tried to just pull out the elements that I could that related to us. Find commonalities in your day versus my day and kind of just grow on those. And I stumbled across this thing. I think I found it on Pinterest and they were like questions, almost like date night questions or something, but like lists of them, 25 to 50 at a time. And I would print them out and I would send them to you. And then whoever, you know, got around to doing them, they would send them back and it would give us something to look forward to. I'd read my answers and I'd read your answers and then, okay, we're ready for another one.
There isn't a question that we didn't do.
We did all of them. And
I used them for my sponsees years later when I finally found recovery and we were real and all that stuff. And a lot of the stuff, the truth is, you know, I did, especially towards the end when I fell off and I relapsed and it really, all that stuff really came in handy when I started to sponsor other men. I started to use it all the time. And then I actually started to teach something is to master it. And then I started to actually finally apply. And you're like, dude, I sent that to you in 2018. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like she was saying that to me all the time. But we did that. We did questions all the time. I want you to share about the book and your experience with the Insera Insider, because that's one of my most favorite things in visitation.
This book was probably my favorite because we read a lot of relationship books and I used to like photocopy pages, put them in the mail. This was an easy read and I actually hand wrote a couple because
she hand wrote actually this whole book to me. She hand wrote every page of this book and we read it together and we talked about it.
It's really only like 111 pages. It's really not very long. But when I was at work, I used to be at the photocopy machine all the time and I'm just like, you know, I need another copy of that. I need one for me. So I try to get away from that. But this was an easy read because my biggest
struggle. What's the title of it?
It's called I Got You. And I hope I get to meet this author someday. If we could have him, you know, come to Desert Recovery Center or something, he needs to know the huge impact that he made on our lives. But this book took me through every emotion you possibly could about a relationship. And I think of things very logically. So I had to understand it wasn't perfect, but it was worth working for because of who it was. So even in the beginning, do I deserve a new beginning? How do I know this time will be different? Resist the urge to control and manipulate things, fair chances. The second part, letting go of pride. How bad do you want it? It takes two. What does the love inspire you to do? It goes through everything so that you can rebuild something, find balance, have the self-confidence in yourself so you know your worth, you know what you're fighting for. You can allow that person to grow and become their own person. It's really what I needed at the time. And I kept going back to it because I felt like he was broken in his own way. I was broken in my own way. I had a lot of trust issues. I was going through not knowing how to raise a child on my own, not knowing if I could do it, parent someone on my own. I was like 28, you know, and it sounds young now. It's a good 10 years ago, but I felt like I was like 21. I felt really, really just naive, lost. So any piece of literature or anything that I could get my hands on, I absorbed it. I gave this book as a gift to some of the girls that I went to visitation with. And I was like, you know what? Because we'd just be standing in line just crying. Like, why are we here again every weekend? How did we get here? What is going on? So I used it as a way to, you know, help other people. But it was just such a meaningful thing. There's snippets of other books that I, you know, kind of took along with me. But this was my favorite. And it's just such a good read. The Ansara Insider kind of got me out of just the mundane letter writing. It helped me make things interesting for you. It gave me something to look forward to. It let me be creative because at that point, everything was the same. I had nothing to look forward to. I had nothing to, you know, make it fun or interesting. So I'd tell, you know, my four or five-year-old, let's go take some pictures for daddy. We'd go to the park. We'd, you know, go to her dance class, go to Goodwill. We really liked, you know, we called it treasure hunting. So we'd go and we'd take pictures in the store with fun stuff we'd buy. And then we'd find jokes for dad and whatever it was, it gave us something to be creative. And then he loved it and started showing people. So whenever I go to visitation, oh yeah, you're the one that makes the newspaper. And it turned into a fun thing. So
yeah, and there were so many different things, you know, and then, you know, I was in Tucson. I was in Tucson for a few years, and that whole time you came every other weekend to see me, just about every other weekend, you know, and that support and the phone calls and the letter writing, even when I was doing my part and even when I wasn't doing my part, that was there. But Ron, you had the complete opposite experience. So why don't you kind of share, you know, what your support journey was? Because my support journey is like complete polar opposite of yours. So, you know, big shout out to your mom, though. Big shout out to her.
Sure. I'm just sitting here listening, you know, and you were looking for a way to escape.
Yeah.
And he's never said this to me. He doesn't have to say this to me because I know him so well and I could put myself in his shoes. When he got that Ansara Insider, it was the most unbelievable thing that happened to him when the mail came through. I would imagine that everything inside of him, I kind of related to in my head right now, in the Big Book, you know, that, you know, men and women use essentially because we like to effect produce. When we ingest that in our body, something happens inside. Something would happen inside of him when he got that insider. It got him away from it all for that moment. And it connected. You connected him. And you can't tell me that God doesn't wear people clothes because you're a beautiful human being.
Oh, thank
you. And I believe that God is in each and every one of us. And that was that's the connection. Those are the connection that God wants from us. So, but anyhow, yeah, for me, yeah, it was much different, man. Nobody wanted to write me, dude.
You didn't get one visit in 7 years, huh?
No, I didn't get one visit.
Do you feel like that was harder or easier? Because you could almost just focus on being the best version of yourself, or you focus on being alone doing that. Do you think it was harder or easier?
I don't think of it as either. For me, it was, that's what it was at that time. And there was, you know, I had a pretty big impact on a lot of men's lives in prison, right? Because my focus the entire 7 years was serving others. And men, they would do a food visit for me.
Oh.
Like they would all throw together spreads, these big awesome spreads, and get secure packs because I didn't get any of that stuff. And I did my last year during COVID. But from my mom, she finally said, hey, you're doing the right thing. But they would do a food visit for me every month.
Yeah, why don't you share the first letter you got from your mom? And
right. So here I was. I got sentenced. My attorney called my mother in New York, let her know I was sentenced to 7 years. Immediately, I got a card. It was the night before I shipped out. And basically, the postcard said, well, I hope you're going to enjoy your home for the next 7 years, and you deserve every day of the 7 years. And then in the letter, she said, I will do this 7-year prison sentence with you under one condition, and that you don't get in any trouble at all. I don't care for any infraction. And that was it. It's a postcard, so you only get a little bit. So
it's only a couple lines.
So that was it. Don't get in trouble. Oh, it was don't get in trouble and don't ever lie to me again.
I heard that.
Yeah. So I get to prison, and, you know, when I touch down, I write my mom this letter that I'm there, and I didn't ask her for anything.
Smart man.
Didn't ask for a thing. 2 weeks later, the money showed up for the TV. Money showed up for to get some extra things. And this is the first time that I ever did prison like that. All the four other prior times, I live off the land.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting a TV my first day there. I'm sitting at the table.
Somehow, some way, I'm going to do what I got to do.
I'm going to get a little bag of store.
Yeah, I'm going to get that.
You know, in my younger days, I served a different function. You know, I wasn't always the hug and rainbow guy.
And that's what I really like, though, to really give a description. You know, there isn't, just like there isn't a perfect upbringing that says that you're going to be successful, and there isn't a perfect support system that could help you find recovery while incarcerated, and there isn't one set way you find recovery, right? It's all about, you know, the connections that you make and the level of effort and commitment that you're willing to put in to make consistent changes that ultimately affect the way you think and you feel about self and the world around you, right? But it took us so long to get there.
I'm sorry, Jay, to cut you off. There's one thing I do want to share about. So my mission was I wasn't going to get any trouble for my mom, right? I was so blinded by I cannot get any trouble for my mom. There was a bunch of byproducts that happened throughout my entire 7-year sentence. Number one, when I became the recovery guy on the yard, I had the freedom to go anywhere I wanted. They trusted me. I could go anywhere. I got to go into visitation on visitation day and meet some of the parents, the guys that I was sponsoring, got to go up in there. So not that I had a visit, but I still got to have that experience. I made it to a minimum yard, got to the minimum yard. I got an ACI job, outside clearance, all that type of stuff. And then building this relationship with my mother. That was the blessing. 3 weeks before I'm getting out, my 7 years is up. They do my, you know, I kill my number, and then I go right to probation. So they do the probation interview while I'm still in prison, and I had 7 years flat and then 4 years IPS. I do the probation interview. She's on the phone with me, and she said, "Could you put the CO3 on the phone, please, Ronald? I'm going through your records, and we think there's a clerical error here. Hold on." Give her the phone. They talk. Give me the phone back. And she said, "Well, we reviewed that you have not received one infraction in 7 years. There's no reason for you to be on IPS."
Oh, so, you were supposed to get IPS?
Yeah, I was supposed to have IPS.
Oh, I didn't know that.
What is IPS?
It's just intensive probation.
Intensive probation. So I was supposed to have IPS.
So there was a lot of wins that came out of that.
So they took me off IPS. They put me on standard. They approved my address to go to Dean's house. Another convicted felon, right? A guy who's been convicted of a felon, only been out of prison for a couple of years. They approved me to go to his house, which in return, when Emmett, a.k.a. Smurf, shout out Smurf, when he was getting ready to get out, I was still on probation, and we put in for him the parole to my house, and everyone said, "They're never going to do it." But they did. All that came from don't get in trouble for 7 years. Do the right thing. Don't lie. And that's what I want from you. Had no idea that all these series of dominoes were going to fall that happened. He was able to parole to my house. So there's been a lot of blessings that came from that, a lot of lessons for me. And it just comes down to the old cliche. Just do the right thing.
I mean, that's what recovery is designed to do. For you to believe in a power that you're going to draw on for strength, to focus your thoughts, to have correct actions in your life to the best of your abilities. And when they're not, because you're human and you're going to make bad decisions and you're going to take negative actions, then you have a tool to clean it up and not cause any further wreckage in your life. And that's recovery. We don't have to overcomplicate it, but it took us a long time to get there, huh, Ash?
Very long time.
And so we were in Tucson Complex. What do you remember on that drive, that two-hour drive? I know it's a different drive there and a definitely different drive back. Why don't you just share about the visitation drive? Then I want to transition into Florence and kind of what happens there.
Visitation is something that kind of carried me through my entire work week. But it also, by the time it hit like Thursday or Friday, it started to be like nervous, kind of anxious vibes from me. So I knew I had a lot to do. Being that I wasn't familiar with Tucson, I knew I had to get like things I needed before, because I still had, you know, a 4 to 5 year old. I forget how old she was. She was really little. Snacks and things in order for her. I had to make sure I got quarters.
Getting the right dress code.
The right dress code was huge, because
they were always trying to kick you out.
I could never do anything right. Tucson was a lot nicer to me than Florence. Tucson, I remember the first time I got turned away was because there was underwire in my bra. And I was like, what are you supposed to wear? And they gave me a copy of the dress code, and it said, like, you have to wear
sports bra or something, right?
Undergarments, but it can't be athletic. I was like, okay. But it also has to go up to your collarbone. So for me, that had to be like a hoodie, like a boat neck shirt, but you can't wear a real... I gave up. Started just ruining my bras. Just cut the underwire out and wear a real bra. I don't care. So then I started just going for like these crew neck t-shirts, and that was always what I looked for. Target, Walmart, Goodwill, just find crew neck t-shirts. Forget it. You know, can't look fancy, can't do anything. You can't have rips in your jeans. You can't have shoes.
You ain't flying with those.
Oh, I'm rebellious now. Your shoes can't have any metal on them. So even like the holes where like the laces go through, if there's like those little metal things, you have to take them off. I got turned away for that once. My daughter had on a tank top once, and it was like 115 in the summer. And I was like, she's a sweaty little thing. Like, can we please? I didn't bring her anything. No, you know, and
you had to go to the dollar store and get a shirt or a Family Dollar.
They knew that they were always turning people away. So the gas station right at the end of the street sold crew neck t-shirts, and she was in a little t-shirt.
Capitalism at its finest.
Yes. Yeah. So it was just always something. It was very stressful. Am I prepared? Am I going to run into someone that wants to be, you know, extra difficult? In Tucson, they had a dog that would sniff. In Florence, they didn't all the time. But Tucson, every single time, you'd have to stand up against a gate and the dog would sniff you. My daughter was terrified of this dog.
She's poor Bella.
We told her that they were looking for Halloween candy.
Well, she believed that. But a couple times, she actually had candy in her pocket. She used to try and take in like little like toys to show Jason. Well, it would turn into a game because she's like, the dog didn't find this.
So she just started trying to bring as many things in as she possibly could. Then she brought in candy. She's like, ah, Dad got you candy.
Dog didn't smell this one. And so there's like a little, you go through, you get, you know,
metal detector,
the dog, and then you get on a bus and they'll take you to whatever unit you're in. Well, we get on the bus and Bella would always just start emptying her pockets. Look at all this. Look at all this. So I realized, she's like, Mom, this is such an adventure. You know, she was having fun because she still got to see her dad, just the most positive, sweet little girl. She didn't feel like she's missing out on anything. She would tell me, Mom, I don't want to go to Tucson this weekend. Okay. All right. There's a visit for me and Dad. And it was fine. She would tell me, I missed Dad. I'm going to go. So she'd go. So Tucson was only difficult because of the distance. Luckily, I was doing pretty well for myself, so it wasn't like a financial burden. But it was the time it took.
And why don't you share a little bit into Florence and then losing our visits, and I'll pick it up from there.
It was, you mentioned the drive there and the drive back. There's nothing like a drive back. It's the worst feeling. Oh, I hate it. Tucson was worse because obviously it's longer. So Bella would pass out. I'd cry the whole way home.
Feelings.
Just.
Yeah, we called it a visitation hangover because the next like 48 hours, it was like an emotional.
You were shot out. She was shot out. Yeah.
Florence got a little easier because I was going every weekend. But that also made it harder because I was not bouncing back as quickly. So at that point, it had already been like 5 years or so. So I'd seen him do well, then not do well. And then by the time he was doing well again, I was like, what more do we need to learn on this journey? What are we not doing correctly? I'm independent. We have a well-adjusted daughter. You're sober. You're helping other people. Like, I started getting real antsy. Like, just, God, what more do you want us to do?
You're like, you got a year and a half left. I don't need to see you anymore. It's going to be fine.
I told him, you know what? You get a ride home. You know the address. Just knock on the door. You don't need to see me anymore. We're fine. let me know when you'll be home. And I was half kidding. And then I'm like, I wonder if I just stop going.
And then COVID happened. But there's a lot that we just kind of sped through right there. But
Well, she didn't want to talk about her being bad in visitation.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is we end up getting moved to Florence. And I finally get to a minimum custody yard. And like you said, you're coming every single weekend. We're getting visits. And in Florence, they weren't so nice to you. And for whatever reason, whatever the case might be, my opinion is they just hated to see, you know, couples and families happy making it through this when they're on the outside still not happy. But it is what it is. And it's really, we lost our visits because of my own actions. It's really nobody else's fault.
That's the first time I ever heard you admit that.
Well, the sad thing is it sounds so much more salacious than it is. It was so sad. This is the New Year's one, right?
No. Yeah, well, I mean, they threw your wedding ring. The first time you came in, your wedding ring on the ground, just brushed it off the table.
Yeah.
You know, they just treated her like crap. But what ends up happening is I'm seeing her every weekend. I'm starting to get more comfortable out there. You know, I'm starting to get more comfortable, and that means my hands, I don't know what to do with them. They're all over the place. I can't control them. They're in her pants. They're not in her pants.
Stop. That is not true.
But what ends up happening is I try to kiss her in between visit, whatever, and I end up getting a minor. I got a bunch of warnings, but they didn't tell me I was getting warnings. They just documented that I was getting warnings. Yeah. And then I got a minor ticket for a kiss at the end too long, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden we're in visit. We weren't doing anything at that time. Okay. And all of a sudden they walk up and they tell her, hey, you got to leave. They immediately end my visit. I end up going through the strip shack and they tell me that I got a major ticket and they took our visits and I didn't have my visits for 6 months that time. No phones, no visits for 6 months and 90 days behind the glass. And I had a reservation this whole entire time. I had a reservation that if I ever lost my visits, I was going to use again. And that's just what it was. And I lost my visits and I used again. And so now this goes on the next year where, you know, she's starting to realize things. Now I'm calling for money all the time. Now I'm doing this. Now I'm losing weight. Now I'm getting one ticket, leads to two tickets, leads to three tickets, leads to Kingman, leads to the hole, and ultimately leads to me finding recovery. But I think it's important to kind of share, you know, once you started to see the shift, because before I had relapsed, I was sober for pretty much 3 years. I had smoked a couple spice sticks here and there, but nothing like, you know, nothing at all. I'm doing college classes. I'm in pretty damn good shape, all these things. And all of a sudden now, you know, you can see the shift in behavior. So why don't you kind of share about the shift in behavior and kind of what that looked like?
It really caught me off guard because, again, when you have distance between you, I tried to give you the benefit of the doubt and just say, you know what, there's a lot going on in his environment that I don't know. I can't just assume that just because you're asking for money so frequently, you know, maybe they ran out of food in your store. Maybe he really does need textbooks. You know, this is not my life. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. So for a long period of time, I was like, I guess that's what it is. I guess he needs stuff. I mean, and then after a while when I'd be like, no, and you'd be like, what do you mean no? The attitude is what did it for me. I think I started seeing like, you don't realize there's a lot that goes into being
me sending you $30 three times a week, $40.
Whenever you feel like it. Having random people call me. Oh, I need that Western Union. I'm on call all the time. Oh, let me step out of this meeting because Jason needs something. It got to be excessive. It got to be like, I'm working for you.
Selfish.
It was just that. That's,
well, it's
that's
a disease of selfishness. It's not about, okay.
That's what it turned into. So when I started classic realizing this is excessive and it's completely not keeping myself or your daughter in the forefront of your mind, it caused a lot of distance. I kind of started to shut down as far as emotionally and putting forth all the effort I had before and wanting to rebuild something because I realized we're not on the same page. We don't want the same things.
And because what ends up happening, though, is they're trying to book me. I'm getting high-speed foot chases. They're sending the dogs to my crib. They're doing all the different things. So finally, Florence would send all the troublemakers to Kingman. So they send me to Kingman, Arizona, but by this time, I'm already in full-scale relapse. I got a worse habit than I ever had out here on the streets. She knows. It's all the powerlessness and unmanageability in my life is in full swing. And then I end up going to the hole, and when you go to the hole, they give you what? another UA. So the day I got my visits back was the next day was when I got hit with the next ticket. So then I lost my visits for a year, and I didn't have for 9 months, no visits, no phones, and then 90 days behind the glass, you know. And so my recovery journey began in 2018 when I finally got out of the hole from Kingman and I finally got back to the yard, but we didn't have phones for the next 6 months. You know, we only had letters. I couldn't call out to anybody. I didn't have a TV. I didn't have anything. And it was exactly what I needed to really start this recovery journey, because I had nothing. And it gave me the ability to really focus on recovery, the big book, and really repairing and rebuilding myself in recovery and everything externally, my relationships. And so we go on this next journey of recovery, you know. And And Ron, I know that, you know, were you writing letters to your mom? Were you telling her you were doing recovery? Was she believing you?
It took a while. Yeah. I didn't, you know, I know better, right? So I didn't tell her those things. I just showed her those things.
That's smart.
She was able to watch on the Arizona Department of Corrections website, and she's seeing all these classes that I'm taking, and then she's seeing the jobs that I'm getting. And she's seeing, you know, the reclasses and
all the things that she's never seen before.
Yeah, yeah, ever. You know, and then we got the tablets, and then, you know, other family members were like, "Oh, he's not dead."
You know, and what did you think, Ash, when I started telling you, you know, I found recovery and I'm making these changes? I used to bring my big book on the phone. We started to go to I got my visits back early, by the way. All my sponsees' parents were introducing me. I think that's kind of what also, like, all right, he's actually doing all this stuff. I actually knew the steps, the big book. I had it with me at all times. I was always reading it to her, sharing what my experience. She got a big book, started to read the big book to kind of understand what I was going through, because she couldn't understand why all of a sudden I met this dude named Matt L in a blue book, and all of a sudden now it fixed what she's been throwing every bit of everything she had at. Yet here we are, and all of a sudden now I'm in recovery. And I know she was salty in the beginning, like, yeah, whatever, all right, cool, and you and your book. In your book, she said. But for every right, I've been telling her I was working a program the whole time being a drug counselor. By now, she thought I was a doctor with a PhD with all the textbooks she had sent me money for that I never had, you know? So, I mean.
Yeah.
By the time you were in recovery, we had already been through so much time of no contact. That was probably the darkest time for me, because I had to learn to be alone and accept that my life might be this way. I might end up by myself. I could have got this one wrong. And I accepted that. And I knew that being alone was going to make me stronger, make me better. You know what? If he comes back, all right. If he doesn't, that's okay too. So by the time you pop up and I've been helping people, I'm going through the steps. I'm like, I don't give a shit. I don't care.
Great.
She said that with all due respect in the nicest way.
Yeah, like, no, she didn't. All the time. I gotta read you something. I was like, do you want to talk to your daughter?
Yeah.
Because I don't care about whatever chapter.
My sponsor's like, stop bringing your book to the phone, brother. Too soon. I'm like, all right. You know how it talks about in the big book, you know, you don't want to lead with a spiritual feature and all these different things because you might prejudice them because they'd be more interested in a demonstration of a goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries or whatever. You know, that's exactly what it was. That book is written so well, dude. It addresses the chapter to the wives, every single thing. It is outdated. It is definitely outdated. I don't think anybody would.
Or is it?
Well,
I mean, different conversation, different time.
Yeah, different
to the wives hurts my heart, honestly. To expect a wife to just hang out in the background and to always, I understand recovery does come first. It does. It always will. You will not have a relationship, a life, anything good will not come out of your life unless you guys continue to pour into your recovery. But the things that these men were just wanting the women to always be in the background, and you know me, that's not going to happen. It's not me.
It was the 30s. That's the piece I'm talking about.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
That part is outdated.
I mean, there was one woman that got sober.
Yeah.
That they talked about anyhow, right?
Ruth.
Ruth.
Yep, that's right. All right.
She was one.
Only one mentioned in the book?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she was basically the catalyst for the wives until you know, that big piece of it. But that's the piece, really. The piece is just that it's just it's outdated. Just
it's
with
the woman's place was it was different. In the kitchen, making the babies.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of where all this resentment comes from, is that you can't continually put someone else's health and well-being before your own. And I think that's where my resentment really started coming from, is that he finally understood your mental well-being, your emotional well-being. You have to take care of that or nothing else is going to line up for you. And I had been saying that for so long. If you take care of yourself right now, I promise everything else will fall in place. And then he starts reading these things back to me. And I'm like, I know.
She's like, yeah, I sent you that, you know.
And they're all, you know, they're worded differently. I'm reading books about manifestation and The Secret. And if it's in your head, you can make it happen. And all these things, just clear your mind. I promise it'll happen. And now he's saying, you know, I just got to get rid of all this resentment. I'm going to release it. Maybe the best version of myself.
And that's what I did. And that's what I did. But it
punch him right in the face.
Well, you know, because now here it is, where all of a sudden now I'm finding, you know, recovery and becoming the best version of myself and everything that she's been through outside there. And she's going, well, hold on, you're being the best version of yourself, but I've just given you everything of myself. And what the what? Now what's going to happen? And now what's this going to be? And it's just, there's so much. Yeah, it's fear. Everything stems back to fear is really what it comes down to. It. And so now we go on this 3-year period where we start to rebuild our relationship and I'm truly working recovery and you could hear it, see it, feel it. And everything starts to culminate, and then COVID happens and we don't see each other for the next year because there's no visits. And then all of a sudden now it's time for release. And so we're going to pick up part 3 with my wife, part 3, day 1 of the release, because there's so much in there. There's so much more to it. And I love hearing day 1 experiences and hearing your experience, Ron. And you know, you could work the greatest program in the world and think that you got it all figured out and think that you're going to get out day 1 and within 20 minutes take over the world and be at Fashion Square Mall doing the thing. You're wrong. You know? But I think it's really important that we continue to share about the tools and the tips and the tricks and the techniques that allow us to continue to get through all the different hurdles, because just because your loved one is sober, that doesn't mean that everything's going to be great now. It doesn't mean that everything is cured and everything is fixed and everything in the past is just let bygones be bygones because you're sober now, because it does not work that way. So I love to talk about what it looks like now over these next 3 years. So part 3, the last 3 years, we'll pick up there. So for all the viewers of the show, continue to like, subscribe, share. Desert Recovery Centers is open. Go to the Instagram, Desert Recovery Centers, Facebook, and the Powerless to Powerful podcast. Ron, where could they find us on TikTok?
TikTok, Ronnie, no matter what. Facebook, Instagram, just like they talked about. And I just want to say this real quick. It was pretty amazing right now, this last hour. Ashley, you're such an amazing human. There's so many other things I can say, but, you know, being, you know, obviously I'm pretty close to the situation, but being able to for us to talk it out, it's pretty wild.
I don't even think people understand, for me, seeing you two run your shenanigans and just, I used to always say, God, I think they're just like, they're just in a bromance all the time, just best friends all the time, all the time, all the time. And I used to always think it was negative. And even you at your worst, you were just so loving to me. You always wanted to make sure I had everything I needed with Bella, just so caring. So to see you guys go through addiction and everything together was just like, this is crazy to see them literally do everything together. So that kind of scared me for a while. And then when I see you guys join forces and be able to help people together and build things like this together and host a show together that's reached so many people around the world, it's a trip for me, because I've seen you guys do this in so many different situations. It's just crazy. It's crazy, but it's an honor. I'll always be here to bring you milk.
Oh, yes.
I'll always be right behind you. I mean, It's my pleasure.
Awesome.
And Desert Recovery Centers is here. We got the team. We got the family together. It just all came together. But most importantly, the clinical team that we're driven by. So Ron can give the hugs and make sure Kipu is dialed in all the way. And we're documenting our journey properly for all the men and women that are going to run through these doors. And then our clinical team, man, I just can't wait. We're open. We're here. Please reach out if you know anyone desperately in need. Whether we got a bed open or not, we'll find him a bed. Continue to tune into the show. Look out for part three. Like, subscribe, share, and tune into the Powerless to Powerful podcast. We're back at it. We got the team together. We'll see you soon. Thank you.